Judicial activism rears its ugly head again at the Supreme Court. Hello and welcome to this portion of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and our guest is Carrie Severino, the president of the Judicial Crisis Network. Their website is judicialnetwork.com. And Carrie, by the way, is the co-author of a best-selling book called Justice on Trial, which dealt with the whole Kavanaugh hearings and what happened to him. Carrie, it's great to have you back on the program. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Now, it's really kind of sad, the circumstances in which we're talking to you, because the Supreme Court ruled recently that Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964 covers transgender status and sexual orientation. Now, inherently, Americans want to be fair. And so we don't want, you know, anybody, including, you know, people who are homosexual or whatever, to be mistreated. Okay, that makes sense on the one hand. And on the other hand, religious freedom should be honored as well. So unpack for us what actually happened recently at the Supreme Court.
Yeah, well, I mean, the problem with yesterday's decision isn't so much, you know, the outcome of that it's going to add sexual orientation as a protected class. That is something that absolutely could be done in federal law. It has been in many federal laws. Nearly two dozen states have written that into their own law to protect sexual orientation and transgender status. However, this decision really bungled things in that it read it into a law that was not about sexual orientation. The law said it prohibits discrimination because of sex, as well as, you know, because of race, because of religion. We're all familiar with the kind of litany that of protected classes that our federal law has. But when you say that something that is two things that are different, discrimination based on sex is and has until yesterday been recognized to be discrimination because someone is male or female, has to do with their biological sex, versus sexual orientation discrimination, which, as I said, many laws include that, but it's a different term. It's discrimination because of sexual orientation. It is an entirely different type of discrimination. To try to equate those and say they are the same thing does violence to the English language, and it does violence to our constitutional system, whereby only the legislators are the ones who can change the law. Our judges don't get to say, well, I think, you know, this should be covered. This should, that's fine. But the legislators have to make that call. The judges only get to say, well, this is what the words mean. It doesn't mean you get to stretch that meaning. It doesn't mean, as Justice Gorsuch kind of said, well, anything that has to do with sex might be covered. That's not how we interpret the law. We have to look at what the original meaning was. And it's very clear that everyone who voted in this law at the time didn't think it meant discrimination because of anything that might have to do with sex. You can still fire someone because they were sexually harassing at work, for example. You could, you know, there are a lot of things that have to do with sex that are not protected by this law. It was always designed to look at people who are discriminating on someone because they were a man or because they were a woman. And now what we have is a very different regime. And as you pointed out, concerns about religious freedom, in particular, because if there's a real legislative fix, which we've seen, as I said, in many cases where the legislators change the law, there's generally at the same time a compromise reached to balance some of those important issues. You know, should churches or synagogues or mosques be forced to employ individuals that are living in a way that is contrary to what they are teaching? You know, that those kind of balances can be struck by a legislature. The court did no such thing. The court simply just changed the meaning of this word, and then it's kind of said, well, we're not going to deal with the consequences. Well, they will deal with the consequences because I think there's going to be a flood of litigation coming, trying to work out what those implications are practically in the real world.
So in a real way, they've created a mess. By the way, sometimes you're in a good cell and sometimes you're not. So if you get yourself in a good cell, can you stay there if you don't mind?
All right.
Sure. The decision of June 15th, 2020, I understand one of the cases went along these lines. There was a Christian-owned, death mortuary kind of business, family-owned business for years and years. They had an employee, good employee by all accounts, you know, for many years, but then the man said, I think I identify as a woman. So even though he was clearly a man, he wanted to wear dresses, and this Christian-owned business, you know, dealing with grieving families, felt that this is inappropriate. So they had a parting of their ways. They fired the guy. Maybe they gave him a good package. I don't know, a severance package. I don't know the details on that. But he sued for discrimination because this is violating transgender rights. And he won yesterday, or he won on June 15th. This is being recorded on June 16th. That seems unfair. That seems almost as if, well, you really don't have the right, you know, as you run your own business, as far as, you know, traditional morality. If you believe the Bible, you know, well, good luck with that. Go, you know, live in some other country. Oh, wait a minute. Wasn't the United States founded by Christians for Christian liberty, which they then gave to everybody, and now we're losing it?
Yeah, there are real concerns as to how this is going to interact with those religious liberty concerns.
Your audio sounds great.
Yeah. Great. Of the individual business owner, think of cases like the Hobby Lobby case, where the employers didn't want to have to cover with their employee health plan procedures that they felt were morally repugnant, like abortion. In this case now, you're going to have potentially employers forced to cover the frankly much more expensive proposition of a sex change surgery.
Yeah. Oh, like $85,000, $90,000, something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it is a real concern. Practically speaking, look, most businesses are not going to have an issue hiring people of either homosexuals or people who are transgender. However, there are certain circumstances, as in the case of his, you know, if Harris's concern for what the impact would be on his clients, the grieving families, encountering his employee who was male in women's clothing, things like that, where you can say, okay, I can see where they have a real concern here. Is it correct then, as a matter of federal law, to mandate this? You know, that's the policy question. And I think that's something that our legislature has to hammer out. The biggest concern I really have here, though, is this is them basically taking a term that everyone knew what it meant. When this law was passed by a representative, they knew what it meant, and they absolutely did not mean that this was going to require you to allow a man to dress in women's clothing at your establishment, that it was going to expand the definition of what sex even means. That is what the court did in this decision, and I think that takes the lawmaking power away from the legislative branch where the Constitution places it. So we elect our legislatures so that they can make the laws that we want as an American people. If they are unable to write words that then have a consistent, stable meaning, we don't live in a system under the rule of law anymore as the Constitution intended.
Yeah, because you could read into a word what you want it to mean. Chief Justice Roberts was obviously very disappointing here, as was Neil Gorsuch. It sounded like With Neil Gorsuch, the Trump administration hit a home run. Obviously, that's totally questionable now.
So Gorsuch is someone I absolutely supported at his confirmation. He still overwhelmingly, more than any other justice, he agrees with Justice Thomas on the court. He is a textualist.
Thomas is the best.
I think in this case, I clerked for Justice Thomas. I love him to death. However, I think I'm not going to not call it out when he gets it wrong. And I think this time he just plain got it wrong.
Gorsuch got it wrong.
He seems to have confused the notion of textualism with a kind of reductivist attempt to take these words out separately and say, well, this has something to do with sex, and therefore it must be because of sex. That's not how Justice Scalia interpreted textualism. Some people have been calling it a surprise meaning textualism, where suddenly, you know, the legislatures had no idea that what the words they passed really meant something totally different. Justice Kavanaugh did a good job in his dissent explaining that there's words that we have to interpret words as they were understood. It, everything from, if you in some legal documents, even though tomato may botanically be a fruit, it's included in vegetables legally. You know, you wouldn't say, oh, well, this must cover, things that no one thinks of as a fruit. He talked about how phrases like a three-pointer could theoretically mean a football field goal because you get 3 points for it. But everyone knows when you talk about a three-pointer shot, you're talking about a basketball shot from outside the three-point line on the court. So we have to use these words and interpret them as they were actually used in common parlance at the time, not try to read into them some sort of hidden, obscure meaning that the legislators never would have intended.
I've had a debate for a few years now with a friend of mine in reference to Chief Justice Roberts. And Roberts is brilliant. There's no question about that. He's absolutely brilliant. And he gets most things right, it seems, but some things he gets wrong. And it seems to me, my friend says he has no real judicial philosophy. I have felt that, well, Roberts does have a judicial philosophy. His philosophy is that the Supreme Court should not legislate from the bench. They should only adjudicate. But it seems to me that this is an example of definitely legislating from the bench. Do you see a judicial philosophy in Chief Justice Roberts?
You know, he himself in his confirmation process pretty much disavowed having a specific judicial philosophy. I think that's actually kind of dangerous, because if you don't have a guiding philosophy, there is a real temptation to kind of pick and choose philosophies.
Oh, it's like a ship without a rudder.
In a specific case.
That's like a ship without a rudder. It's like a ship without a rudder, you know, in a tempest-tossed sea. I mean, come on.
Right. If you say, I'm going to follow this chart sometimes, that chart sometimes, well, how do you pick which one you choose when? Then it's always a challenge for a judge to make sure that he or she is not reading into the law what their own personal policy preferences are. And when you don't have a clear judicial philosophy, that makes that temptation all the more great. I think that's a little different than what's happening with Gorsuch here, where he clearly is a textualist. He embraces textualism, but I think he just got textualism itself wrong and is using an improper form of textualism in this case. Roberts, I think, is a little bit more, tends to pick and choose which philosophy he applies, and I think he also has some misunderstandings about the court's the importance of the court basically backing down from controversial opinions. He seemed to, in the Obamacare case, take some decisions that said, well, if there's any way, even if it's a contorted reading of the statute, to avoid the court having to make a tough decision on a constitutional issue, we'll take that reading. You know, that's certainly not textualism. You can't contort statutes and read them in a tortured way, simply to avoid having to make the constitutional questions that, frankly, the court is there to make.
Well, I hope that we are not seeing in some way a harbinger of things to come, that is, liberal decisions coming out of the Supreme Court. I forgot the exact numbers, but I remember I added it many, many years ago, of the 7-2 of Roe versus Wade. One of the two that voted against it had been appointed by John F. Kennedy, a Democrat appointed. The majority were appointed by Republicans, and Nixon claimed to be pro-life, not pro-abortion, and yet that gave us abortion on demand because of its companion decision, Doe v. Bolton. We've been struggling with that ever since. 60 million abortions later, here we still are. I hope we're not looking at, you know, monstrous court decisions in the future. We have about a minute left.
So unfortunately, historically, some of the most liberal justices in the court have been appointed by Republicans. For a long time, Republican presidents weren't even bothering to look at someone's judicial philosophy when they nominated them. That has changed. Even when we have situations like this where it's kind of a one-off decision for Gorsuch, he still overwhelmingly votes with Thomas. I think you see a real shift in the direction of the court toward a court that is looking at the text and the original meaning. So even when there are disappointments like this, I think we're moving in the right direction. And overall, Trump's nominees to the court have had some really strong decisions. And I can't say the Bostock decision was one of them, but as you saw, Justice Kavanaugh had a very solid dissent in that, explaining how textualism should really work in practice. I think we're seeing a lot of those kind of judges on the appellate courts, and that is good news for the future of American democracy.
We have 20 seconds left. What does this mean in terms of the transgender sports issues, where a guy who says, I'm a woman, you know, can weightlift and outwin the women every time biologically, come on, or do the same thing in the track and field? Now transgender rights apparently are sacred, you know, according to the Supreme Court.
Well, Justice Alito's dissent clarified the problem there, and yet this is about employment law, so this could extend that to professional sports as well. Could the WNBA still continue if biological men are forced to be admitted into them? Well, will there be any women left on the team even in these women's sports? So it's a real concern. You know, the bath and the locker room issues, the court didn't want to get into those really thorny questions, but it simply can't avoid it, because if you're saying that discrimination based on sex also requires you to allow, again, men into biological men into women's locker rooms and to compete on an uneven playing field with biological women, the court will be seeing lots and lots of litigation trying to clarify these things in the future.
Wow. Okay, Carrie Severino, thanks for being with us. JudicialNetwork.com for more information. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.